Welcome to Disc 3 of Beyond the 7 Habits with Dr. Stephen R. Covey. And now we return to the program.
Other questions?
I've always believed that self-esteem is critical to success, especially in business ventures, but really any venture. Much of what you describe is giving in, serving, forgiving, and could be perceived as weakness, which isn't necessarily adding to a person's self-esteem. How do you kind of reconcile that difficulty and understanding that I'm having?
Okay, very good. What is the ultimate basic source of self-esteem? What do you think it is? Is it the social mirror that values and affirms your worth? Is that the ultimate basic source of self-esteem? If so, these approaches may appear appeasing and weak, and thus a lowering of self-esteem. By the way, if you read the self-esteem literature, most of it focuses upon social validation. It really does. I suggest an alternative source of self-esteem. It's called integrity, which means you live by your conscience so strongly that your security comes from within. It is not a function of how other people perceive you or treat you at all. You cannot be offended. I commend to you renting the film Gandhi, bringing it into your home, and use it for your family meetings where you're trying to develop a value system among your family and ultimately maybe a family mission statement. You see him at one stage in the jail in South Africa. He has all the moral authority. He's brought in to the warden's office in chains. The warden takes the chains off right outside the office door and says, "Be seated." And the warden says to Gandhi, "Do you think that you could get the people to do so and so?" And Gandhi says back, "I feel like it would be unfair of me to take advantage of you in that way." Here is the warden. Here is the prisoner brought in chains, temporarily unchained, and the warden asks him a request. And he said, "I think that would be unfair. That wouldn't be enough win for you, warden." You see, his security had nothing to do with social validation. These, to me, are what I call the three generations of self-esteem. It starts with humility, which means principles govern, not your ego. And courage to obey those principles, even though I'm running against cultural norms, upstream forces that are not widely understood. Those two produce a child called integrity. And integrity produces two children: wisdom and the abundance mentality, which means I don't see life as a contest. I don't define winning as beating. I don't think that because you get a big piece of the pie, I have less. I believe in this, that the pie gets larger and larger and larger the more we seek each other's interests. No comparison. I presented this material right here in Milwaukee at the Self-Esteem Conference. Almost all of the breakout groups focused on self-esteem through the social mirror. through affirmation of parents and other people. I'm not against that. I like that. I really do. I think it's good. But I do not think it is foundational to self-esteem. The essence of self-esteem is integrity, born of obedience to principles. Humility accepts principles governing, and courage to obey them. And then it is amazing how people don't get offended. They can say, I apologize to you, Max. The other day, when you came into my office, and I catch you off at the knees when you came up with that creative suggestion, that was wrong of me. I apologize to you. And I'm going to apologize to the other people that know what I did as well. See, the traditional approach says, wow, this macho manager apologizing, and he comes across weak. Hey, all this touchy-feely, soft skills crap. It's the opposite. Everyone knows that the hard stuff is the people stuff. The number stuff is easy stuff. Why? Things, numbers, machines, inventory, microphone. What's hard is for Bill and Bob to produce a synergistic solution. What's hard is for Bill to subordinate his ego enough that he'll listen to Bob, and for Bob to subordinate him to listen to Bill. That's what's hard. And does this end up with compromise? No. It ends up with synergy. Their relationship is transformed. See, most people are used to defensive communication, or at best, respectful communication, which ends up in compromise. See, the third alternative is this. We can hardly wait to get our $100 after this, right? Third alternative is that. Compromise, there's the touchy-feely stuff. Or even more touchy-feely is lose-win. Have your way with me, everyone does. You know, whatever you say. And then you develop a kiss-up culture that reinforces the codependency, because I'm passive and compliant, justifying your control and external carrot and sticking, justifying my compliance and my compromise and my passivity. I hate the job, so I find my satisfactions off the job. The job is full of turf disputes, silo thinking. They try to synergize strategically, but when it comes to execution, it's all silo, all kinds of problems. That's what helped produce any major problems or traumas in our national or corporate life, is silo thinking. To get the CIA and the FBI together, that's a major synergistic operation where you're dealing with two cultural DNAs. But if this thing with Sodom is the real threat of an evil person with the power to destroy or trigger off a major thing, weapons of mass destruction, which one could kill thousands, millions, maybe. Boy, you subordinate everything for a synergistic solution. But what if the structures and the systems aren't there? What if people haven't developed the skills? See, it will not happen. You will not execute synergistically. In the old days, you were almost sad if the criminal got caught by the other agency, because you didn't get the credit. Did you ever see that movie, The Battle of Britain, where Laurence Olivier, the great English actor, played the role of Churchill? And the bombers were coming over, and the B-2s were raining on Birmingham, Leeds, Manchester, London, night after night after night, just demoralizing the country. They didn't know what was going to happen, and these big bombing raids just destroying, and half the Spitfires had lost, and this was just going on again and again and again. And there it shows Churchill with the three defenses, the Army, the Navy, the Air Force. And you could just feel the depth of despair. and each one are pleading for their own situation and their own role and their own rights. And the most beautiful statement in the entire movie is when he says, "You know, I don't know what to do. All I know is, if we don't act wisely and together now, there may be no British Empire within 72 hours. They all knew it. They all were utterly sobered. Humility, the mother of all virtues. Courage, the father. Integrity, the child. So they just began to synergize. Synergy is another word for abundance thinking. Wisdom. That's when he started giving that magnificent speech to Great Britain. We will fight in the trenches. No matter what happens, we will overcome this thing. And gave heart to the British people. This isn't soft stuff. This is hard, difficult, challenging. But so is humility. I'm going to show one picture to this side of the room and a different picture to this side of the room. And then I'm going to show a third picture to everybody. Okay? Now you're only going to see these pictures for 1 second. So get ready. And please don't look at the picture you're not supposed to look at. I'll show you afterwards all three pictures so you can see exactly what happened. Okay? The first picture I'm going to show to this side of the room. So you people look up. You people put your heads down and close your eyes until I tell you otherwise. Okay, put the picture up. Take it down. All right, now this side of the room, look up. This side of the room, put your heads down and close your eyes. Put the picture up. Put it down. Everybody now look at this picture. Put it up. Put it down. When you saw this last picture, how many in this room initially thought it was a saxophone player? Raise your hands. Look around the room, everyone. How many thought it was a woman? Raise your hand. Look around the room, everyone. Okay. This side of the room saw the woman with 2 exceptions. This side of the room saw the saxophone player with 7 exceptions. With this many hundreds of people, a total of 9 exceptions, you're both looking at the same thing, and you see something different? Who's right?